Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The author Thomas Pynchon is famously reclusive. So reclusive, in fact, he didn't even show up to accept the National Book Award back in 1974 for his novel Gravity's Rainbow. He doesn't do interviews. He definitely doesn't do cameras. But he does do The Simpsons?
Here's your quote. Thomas Pynchon loved this book almost as much as he loves cameras. Hey, over here, have your picture taken with a reclusive author. Today only, we'll throw in a free autograph.
That is, in fact, the voice of author Thomas Pynchon, playing himself a couple of years back on an episode of The Simpsons. And it wasn't the only time he'd made a cameo on that show. Naturally, he was portrayed with a bag over his head. But I guess we at least now know what Thomas Pynchon sounds like. Or at least what his voice sounds like, because ever since he published his first novel, V, back in 1963, readers have had a pretty good idea of what his books sound like. They're riddled with near-constant references to music, and his 2009 book, Inherent Vice, is no exception. That book has now been adapted into a film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson and featuring appearances by Joaquin Phoenix, Josh Brolin, Reese Witherspoon, Benicio del Toro, Owen Wilson, and even the singer Joanna Newsom. Now, before it gets its world premiere this weekend at the New York Film Festival, we thought we'd invite Rob Sheffield, author and contributing editor at Rolling Stone, to talk a bit about the music featured in Inherent Vice. Rob, good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
So, Pynchon is notoriously tough, and I have to say, I have not read Inherent Vice yet, and none of us have seen the film. So, but already, lots of talk circulating about music and stuff like that. So kind of take us into the world of Pynchon's music here.
Well, it's funny because he's such a psychedelic guy in his music tastes. And
Fitting for a novel that seems to be set at the end of the psychedelic rock era.
Yeah, it's 1970. It's L.A. It's deep in the psychedelic era where people are talking constantly about the Electric Prunes and the Rolling Stones. And at one point, one of the hippie girls is wearing one of the detective's Pearls Before Swine t-shirts.
Oh,
which,
wow.
I don't think that ever happened in a Raymond Chandler novel.
No. And that's a deep cut, too.
Yes.
That's not a band that a lot of people knew or remember. So he's clearly kind of tapping into the music as what? A way is it verisimilitude? Is it a way of kind of sketching the mood and the scene?
It sets the scene, definitely, the way in an old-time kind of noir you'd have the scene in the nightclub where someone's singing, you know, the bluesy torch song. The same kind of thing happens here, except there's this psychedelic soundtrack to all the characters' adventures, and sometimes it's ominous and sometimes it's melodious, but everybody's constantly weaving music references into everything they say, even the most casual sentence, so that he says, "My story is sad but true," as Dion would say. Or, "But then, one fine day," as the Chiffons would put it. You know, there's music references everywhere.
So now you've picked some songs for us from Inherent Vice. How do the Surfaris and Wipeout fit into the... First of all, what is the story? It's basically a detective tale, right?
Yeah, it's basically a detective tale where there's... standard thing. There's a few women who aren't necessarily what they seem, and a detective who thinks he's looking at one mystery, and it turns out to be a deeper mystery. But of course, it's the end of the '60s. Everybody's got a lot of paranoia. It's the Nixon era, the post Woodstock, post Manson, post Altamont era, and everybody's a little more nervous and paranoid than they were a few years ago.
And there's a fair amount of marijuana being smoked, which
may contribute.
So back to the Surfaris. How does Wipeout fit in?
There's a great scene where he goes to a surfer bar to look for clues, and it's a bar full of hardcore surfers, and everybody likes to talk about there's this mysterious wave that you ride it and it takes you under and you're never heard from again. It's the cosmic wave that destroys you. And right before you die, what you hear is the cackle at the beginning of Wipeout.
Classic bit of surf rock from the Surfaris, and that, of course, is Wipeout, which is mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book, Inherent Vice. And Rob Sheffield, we're assuming some of this music will make its way into the film as well?
Some. Haven't seen the film, but the music is so dense, really, in all of Pynchon's novels. It's funny because the laugh at the beginning of Wipeout, that's almost like a parody of the beginning of Gravity's Rainbow, where people hear this screaming across the sky and they know that means there's about to be an air raid. It's funny that that same kind of sense of constantly listening to the world around you is something that's in all his books, but it's rock and roll here.
So Thomas Pynchon's Inherent Vice being made into a film by Paul Thomas Anderson. It premieres on October 4th. At the New York Film Festival, here in New York, obviously. Rob Sheffield is with us on Soundcheck to talk about music in Pynchon's book. And so what does it tell us about Pynchon himself as a music fan, the eclecticism? The playlist that goes with this book is literally like 300 songs long.
It's amazing. Yes. Drugs and music, two things he knows very intimately. Because there's so much about Thomas Pynchon that we don't know, that he never reveals. The music references in his books are really the most concrete clues. Even going back to V, his first book in 63, a lot of it is based on his friendship with Richard Farina, who, of course, you know, was a significant singer-songwriter who died very young.
Right.
And was
in
Pynchon's
the folk
best
world,
friend,
yeah.
Yes, in college. And there's a lot of that sort of, you know, early Bob Dylan, Ornette Coleman, Thelonious Monk kind of musical ambience in V. And what we mostly know about Pynchon is that anything he writes, it's full of musical references, even in the most casual way.
And they have in the past been very casual. There's nothing that ever feels forced. It seems to grow organically out of the characters that he's created. And in this playlist that you've put together for us, Rob, we come next to Pink Floyd for a very kind of nerdy, geeky reason, right?
Well, it's a psychedelic song that has, I guess, the connection to surf rock in the sort of Farfisa organ. That there's a part where there's a musician in the book who's playing an organ that Rick Wright from Pink Floyd recommended to him. And it's really strange that this organ pops up at strange moments during the book. And at one point, Doc, the detective, he's just driving, and he turns up the song on the radio. It just happens to be Interstellar Overdrive, which is this almost 10-minute Pink Floyd classic instrumental.
It's a classic psychedelic freakout from Rick Wright and the rest of the gang of Pink Floyd. Fallen into a Cheech and Chong routine. Pink Floyd's Interstellar Overdrive, a real head trip from the late 60s, mentioned, I was going to say in passing. Is any of the music mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book genuinely in passing, or are we supposed to take note of it and derive something from it?
It's funny because sometimes he'll just use it as just he'll drop a reference and not follow up on it, you know, when he says, you know, and then he slipped into unconsciousness, as Jim Morrison would say, and that's never mentioned again, whereas the Pink Floyd song and that keyboard motif, it shows up a few times in the book.
So Rob Sheffield's with us, author and contributing editor at Rolling Stone, giving us a kind of quick sound check perusal of some of the music mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book Inherent Vice. The movie premieres October 4th here in New York at the New York Film Festival. So the novel is set in Southern California in the 1960s, 1970. So you've got your surf rock, you've got the Beach Boys. There's a lot of stuff from the 60s.
Yeah.
The truly execrable song Sugar Sugar by the Archies gets a mention. Anything there that surprised you, that kind of stood out, that was unexpected?
Well, a lot. There's music from different worlds. There's this amazing scene where he goes to a bar and there's a torch singer and she's doing the old standard, "It Never Entered My Mind," which the doc, the detective, that's not his thing. And he mentions that he hates torch songs and he avoids that kind of thing. And that song, powerful, amazing song that just steals over him and just really, you know, imposes itself on his heart. And this isn't a song he knows or has heard already, but it really sets the mood. You could tell that there's some serious betrayal about to happen. Mm.
Let's hear Julie London's version. I mean, he doesn't mention her, right,
no.
by name?
No.
But the song is "It Never Entered My Mind," one of the musical surprises on this Thomas Pynchon playlist.
Once I laughed when I heard you say that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind. Once you told me I was mistaken, that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one. It never entered my mind.
That is Julie London and her version of It Never Entered My Mind, another song that Thomas Pynchon references in the novel Inherent Vice. Rob Sheffield is with us on Soundcheck. He reviewed the book for Rolling Stone back in 2009. Will you be reviewing the film when it opens on October 4th?
Yes, I'm really excited for it. It's Paul Thomas Anderson, whose sensibility, like, interlaces with Pynchon's in so many interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I saw from him was There Will Be Blood, which is pretty dark stuff. And this seems like it is a much, you know, while there's like paranoia, as you said before, it seems like there's more of a kind of comic feel to this.
Yeah, it's funny because Paul Thomas Anderson is such a poet of Southern California, and, you know, Boogie Nights is such a classic late 70s, early 80s movie about California. It's so interesting to think of him going to town on that early 70s, late 60s sort of vibe, and when everything's a lot more innocent.
Yeah. So Thomas Pynchon's novel, now made into a film by Paul Thomas Anderson. The world premiere, the film premiere is October 4th at the New York Film Festival. I guess it is the world premiere. I mean, no one's seen the thing yet.
No.
Lyrics play into a lot of Pynchon's writing. And, you know, as with a lot of novelists who use music as a subject, you know, they often take the opportunity to weave in like fictional bands and fictional lyrics. So do we get a kind of a sense of Thomas Pynchon as a frustrated songwriter, as a lyricist here?
Definitely. It's amazing how many songs he writes in the book that he'll just say, this is the song that was playing on the radio. And and he'll just have his lyrics. He's been doing that always in, mm-hmm. in his novels. There are songs that he writes. One in his first novel was set to music by the Inset Trust on their album Hoboken Saturday Night, The Eyes of a New York Woman. So people could put these songs to music, I guess, if he permitted that sort of thing. But it's amazing how much you get a sense of him as a sort of frustrated songwriter.
And do the musical references ever actually advance the plot? Are they things that, you know, the narrative hinges on?
There are definitely times where you get a sense of what's going to happen or what has happened, or you realize more what's happened. The way, for instance, that last song, It Never Entered My Mind, he's in a bar and he's not expecting anything, and he hears this song that, you know, as it says, it turns him to jello. And, you know, and there's this sense that what he thought was going to happen changes very dramatically after that point. I don't want to spoil what passes for a plot in this intricately plotted. I don't think anybody's figured out enough of the plot to spoil it after all these years. But
now, you also suggested that we listen to something from the Stones. And, of course, it's 1970. The Stones are at the height of their fame. But the song you've chosen is not one of the big hits. How does this song weave its way into the story?
It's funny. At one point, Doc the Detective, he's driving along and he's just turning on the radio and he hears the Stones singing, "Something Happened to Me Yesterday." And it's funny because it sets the scene, because you think, wow, like this was a time when you could just be driving in your car radio and turn it on and somebody's playing this incredibly strange Stones deep cut about, you know, discovering psychedelics in 1966. Very early, strange sort of Stones song. And that sort of sets the environment, where songs like this are just part of the environment, part of the background.
This is Something Happened to Me Yesterday from the Rolling Stones.
Something happened to me yesterday. Something I can't speak of right away. Something happened to me. Something also groovy. Something happened to me yesterday. He don't know if it's right or wrong. Maybe he should tell someone. He's not sure just what it was, or if it's against the law. Something. Something very strange I hear you say. You're talking in a most peculiar way. But something really threw me. Something also groovy. Something happened to me yesterday.
As Rob Sheffield said, a deep cut from the Rolling Stones out of the Thomas Pynchon playbook. That is called Something Happened to Me Yesterday. It's mentioned in the novel Inherent Vice. Rob, we just don't know how many, if any, of these songs will make it into the film version that Paul Thomas Anderson has done. We do know Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead is returning. He did the score for There Will Be Blood and is doing the soundtrack for this movie as well.
Which should be amazing. He seems to be very much on Pynchon's wavelength. Radiohead, of course, have lots of Thomas Pynchon references. Their website is Waste, after the crying of Lot 49. So that's a deep, deep ongoing relationship there.
And in terms of the songs that you've grown accustomed to as a part of the story, having read and reviewed the book, what do they simply have to keep musically in the film?
Well, because surf music is such a key part of the film. You know, one of the missing guys is a saxophonist in a surf rock band. And there's all these jokes about how completely terrible the sax playing is in all surf rock hits. And that's part of the brilliance of it, that you have to be a really precise kind of terrible saxophonist to play those sax solos. So I think Pipeline is the classic surf song that really, it shows up so many times in the book. The Shantae's Pipeline is kind of the ultimate anonymous surf instrumental that you'd hear playing in the background in some movie or on some car radio, and it's this mysterious sort of song that weaves its way all the way through the novel.
Will it be in the film? We'll find out on October 4th at the New York Film Festival when Paul Thomas Anderson's version of Thomas Pynchon's Inherent Vice hits the screen. Rob Sheffield will be reviewing it, but he's been giving us a bit of a preview here on Soundcheck today. And Rob, always a pleasure to see you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, John.
Up next, if you were a fan of the NBC series 30 Rock, all I have to say to introduce you to our next guest is Trucker Hat and Glasses. Yes, Judah Friedlander, who played the character of Frank on 30 Rock, joins us next to talk about ping pong, Elvis, Wonder Woman, and music. And later, stick around for live music in our studio from the British pop star Paloma Faith. That's coming up on Soundcheck.
Pick me up, love, from the bottom up on to the top, love, every day.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Usually we start these Pick 3 segments with our Pick 3 theme music from De La Soul, but my guest today has his own theme music, or rather, a song that he's been indelibly associated with. It's the Dave Matthews Band's Every Day, and if you've seen the video for this 2001 song, you've seen my guest, Judah Friedlander. He's the guy in the trucker hat, giving out hugs. But of course, you've also seen him, with or without the trucker hat, in films like Zoolander and American Splendor, and most recently, in the hugely successful NBC sitcom, 30 Rock. Judah, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
And you have the trucker hat on right now.
Yeah, this one is from my stand-up act. It's in sign language, and it says world champion.
In sign?
In American sign
in ASL.
Language.
ASL, very good. Yep. So that in the role of Frank Rossitano on 30 Rock, did you bring the glasses and the hat to the table, or was he always supposed to look like that?
I did bring the hat and glasses to the table. You know, before I did 30 Rock, I'd been doing stand-up for close to 20 years, mm-hmm. and I had been doing acting in movies for, about a dozen years, I guess, you know, and I'd done about 20 or so movies, and many of the times when I did movies, I would completely change my look, mm-hmm. and so where I was unrecognizable, you know, use a different voice, different appearance, everything, and...
That's why I call it acting.
Yeah, and I love doing that. And in show business, it's actually really hard to do that because everyone wants to stereotype you.
Uh-huh.
That's how the business kind of works. They work on stereotyping. And so I always fought against that. And then 30 Rock came along. And stand-up, I love acting. I love filmmaking. But stand-up has always been my main thing and continues to be my main thing. And I have a very specific look for my stand-up, and it's all integrated with my jokes, mm-hmm. With you know how I talk, everything. So when I decided to do 30 Rock, when I was fortunate and got that part, I said, you know, I'm going to have to look like me in this because, you know, we're going to be filming 8 or 9 months out of the year. Even while we're filming, I'm still doing stand-up. I won't be able to tour because we're filming in New York, but I can do stand-up shows in New York pretty much every night. And they were cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, well, my hats always say world champion in some language when I do stand-up because it's intertwined with my whole stand-up persona and identity. So I'm like, well, let's maybe Frank, he's certainly not the world champion. You know, he's not the greatest martial artist on the planet. He's not the next president of the United States like the world champion is. But maybe Frank can use these hats as a way to, you know, he may not be the best with trying to impress women, which mm-hmm. he likes to do. So maybe his hat can sort of send little jokes and messages out there. And then maybe he can also use his hat to passive-aggressively anger Liz Lemon. You know, like this is like any sketches that he doesn't get on the show, he can put them on his hat just to sting it to her a little bit there.
Yeah. Judah Friedlander is with us on Soundcheck. He's performing stand-up at Caroline's on Broadway Thursday through Saturday, October 2nd through October 4th. He's author of the book How to Beat Up Anybody. And, of course, you've seen him on 30 Rock and numerous films. And he's sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us today. Now, we recently did a playlist of funniest songs ever, but it seems like you take music pretty seriously. You didn't give us anything particularly funny.
You know, it's interesting. I gave you about 10 songs, and I'm just horrible. It's weird. It's like trying to pick
what part
lists.
Of Pick 3 didn't quite sink in.
Well,
there.
Math has never been one of my strong points. And then I also like having to choose like 3 songs. It's almost like it creates anxiety. It's like, well, if I pick this one, and then it's going to be like, well, then what about that song? That's they're going to be a little upset, you know. So it's just hard to pick. And then I did have a list of some funny songs, but some of them were funny intentionally, and then some were funny unintentionally.
Yeah, like what's an example of a song that's unintentionally funny for you?
There's a song from Linda Carter. Wonder Woman,
yeah.
In 1978, put on an album, and she did a cover of Billy Joel's, I think it's called She's Always a Woman.
She's Always a Woman to Me.
Yeah. So she's singing that, and, you know, she had to change the lyrics because I think she wants to come off as heterosexual. So, and it seems like the whole thing is just slightly off key, too. I don't have a great ear, but to me, it sounds. Something sounds flat or sharp there. I don't know, you know. So she, like, at the last second, it sounds just like the Billy Joel song, except, you know, with her singing it. And then all of a sudden it's like, and she's always a woman like me. Why is she singing about a woman who's like her? I don't like it. Just sounds very narcissistic, you know. It's like, I know you wanted to, you know, make it like a hetero song all of a sudden, but it also changes the complete meaning. So, like, I guess this woman's great because she's like yourself, so, and you're the best, so this woman's got to be amazing too. So it's just kind of that song makes me laugh. Yeah.
So Linda Carter covering Billy Joel, that
yeah.
makes Judah Friedlander laugh. But let's get to a serious song from your Pick 3, because okay. this is also a cover.
Yeah, that's
Tom
right.
Tom Jones,
yeah.
and this makes me laugh,
yeah.
Tom Jones covering Hoobastank.
Yeah, The
Why?
Reason. The Reason. I tell you, when I first heard this song, first of all, I'm going to say straight off the bat, I don't pretend to have any kind of taste when it comes to music. I think I'm someone who's always been ripped on by other people for having no idea what good music is, but, you know, and I'm not a music expert by any means, but I like what I like, and I'm a huge Tom Jones fan.
Mm-hmm.
Huge Tom Jones fan. And so a song came out, I don't know, several years ago, it might be 10 years ago now, The Reason by Hoobastank. I don't even know the name of it, but
on both counts.
Yeah,
there.
I thought it stunk. I thought it was whiny. It was annoying. So anyways, I'm a huge Tom Jones fan. So one night, several years ago, I'm on YouTube just listening to different Tom Jones songs, and I see one that comes up, and I think it's a concert from South America.
From Chile, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's from 2007, and Tom Jones is singing that Hoobastank song. And to me, it's amazing.
I'm sorry that I hurt you. It's something I must live with every day. And all the pain I put you through, I wish that I could take it all away. The one who captures all your tears. That's why I need you to hear.
That is the one and only Tom Jones with his version, his unlikely cover of the Hoobastank song, The Reason. Thank you, Judah Friedlander.
You're welcome.
It's a really nice cover. And, you know, I mean, looking over the whole list from which we've picked three for this playlist today, there's a lot of older singers, older songs. I mean,
sometimes when people ask me about, like, influences for stand-up comedy, I'll actually say Tom Jones, Elvis Presley, Tammy Wynette, you know, and people are like, what? Tammy Wynette? I'm like, if you listen to her sing, to me, the acting, the way she uses her voice, and, you know, she'll be very quiet in moments, very, you know, some syllables are very soft and then some are very stern and strong. It's like, and even though she's very still when she performs, there's a lot of, you know, power in her eyes and in her voice. And, you know, I think as a performer, you can get inspiration from so many people from so many different genres. It's not just the particular genre that you work in.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I love a lot of those. And same thing with Elvis. You know, I like the Elvis's older work is where I'm really a huge fan of. I'm not against his early stuff, but it doesn't turn me on. But his older stuff, like, I think it's...
So, like, what period are we talking about?
I think it would be after 68. You know, I think 68 was when he was his big comeback. So, yeah.
So late period Elvis.
Yeah.
Is Separate Ways an example of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Separate Ways. I first came across this Elvis song in one of my favorite bad movies called Elvis and the Beauty Queen.
I know that one.
I think it was based off of a book written by a woman who went out with Elvis, I think secretly. And it was a TV movie, and Don Johnson from Miami Vice fame played Elvis Presley. And I'm a big Don Johnson fan. I actually think he's an excellent actor.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's been in cheesy things, but he's been brilliant in some things. But he was not the guy to play Elvis. It just did not work. So, yeah, there's a scene where he's all upset and he's crying at the piano and just playing Are You Lonesome Tonight, crying by himself. And it's just I can't stop laughing when I watch it. But somehow that's how I think I came across Separate Ways. And I think it's a great sad song, and I think I love a lot of sad love songs. Mm-hmm. I really love sad love songs, and again, Elvis is when there's like I think it was from a movie Elvis on Tour, which I think Martin Scorsese was actually one of the editors of, a concert film that Presley did. Separate Ways. It shows him and the guys in his band playing the song, and it looks just kind of like a loose rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And he just has this you feel like you're floating. You know, it's so smooth. And again, at some moments he'll be so soft, barely even audible, but it's just so sensitively sung and performed, and you just get this floating motion. And I remember years ago, I had a tiny part in Zoolander, like you said, and John Voight, he played the father of Zoolander. I played Scrappy Zoolander, one of the coal miner brothers, and I hung out with John Voight a lot on that. And we talked about this floating feeling. When you do something right, it feels like you're floating, and it's just completely effortless. You know, you don't see the effort, you don't feel the effort.
What athletes call being in the zone.
Yeah, you know, and when I hear Elvis sing Separate Ways and when I see him sing it, I get that feeling. Mm. And it seems like he's totally feeling that.
I see a change has come into our lives. It's not the same as it used to be. And it's not too late. Realize our mistake, we're just not right for each other. Love has slipped away, left us only friends. We almost seem like strangers. All that's left between us are the memories we share of times we thought we cared.
Oh, That is Elvis Presley with his song Separate Ways, picked for us by the actor and comedian Judah Friedlander, who's been in 30 Rock and the films Zoolander and American Splendor and Wet Hot American Summer. He's the author of How to Beat Up Anybody, and he'll be at Caroline's on Broadway Thursday through Saturday, October 2nd through October 4th. But right now he's here with us on Soundcheck today. You mentioned the sound of Elvis being kind of in that state, you know, that flow state, as neurologists call it. And I said something about athletes being in the zone. Now, you play competitive ping pong, right?
Yeah, I do. Soccer was always my game. And, you know, in my stand-up act, I'm the greatest athlete in the world in every sport. But legitimately, soccer was always my game. And
what was your position?
Mostly center midfield, but I played different positions depending on, you know, what teams I was on. And I've actually been doing a lot of advocacy. I'm trying to do as much as I can for soccer and for ping pong, or what they call table tennis as well. There was a 7-part documentary series on the men's national team as they were preparing for the World Cup that ESPN aired, right. And I did the narration for that. And table tennis is a sport I'm still trying to – it's a real sport. A lot of people – everyone's played it. Everyone thinks they're the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are terrible at it, and most people don't realize that it's actually a real sport where the top players actually train 6 hours a day every day since they were a little kid, and it's a very highly skilled and technical as well as highly you know, there's a lot of strategy involved in it as well. So – yeah, I love it. So I try to support it. I have my paddle with me today. That's why I have a suitcase with me.
You travel with your paddle.
I'm going to grab this here a second. I have...
Opening the suitcase.
My ping pong paddle.
Okay. With a ball, yeah. You have a...
And my ping pong shoes.
Wow.
That's when you're serious. Most people will say, oh, you have your own paddle, you're serious. When you have your own ping pong shoes, that's when you're serious.
They almost look like indoor soccer shoes.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of movement. Ping pong, there's a lot of lateral movement.
Yes.
And you need a good sole with a good grip. So that's basically what a ping pong shoe is. It can also be like a volleyball shoe or...
And in both games, in soccer and ping pong, I really don't play ping pong, although I do play soccer. You need that ability to pivot quickly, to change direction quickly stuff.
And mostly laterally.
Right.
You know.
Which would stand you in good stead, I'm sure, in your live sets in stand-up.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know... As you get older, you actually do need to keep getting in better shape to perform, you know, and just for health reasons. So that's initially why I got back into ping pong. I played a little bit competitively as a kid. And then in 2008, I hadn't played in years, and I found myself up at 3:30 in the morning watching live ping pong online from the Beijing Olympics. And I'm like, I got to start playing again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started playing again. And I initially got into it as an escape. And now it's an escape, but it's also a sport I'm trying to promote, you know.
All right. Well, job done.
Thanks.
Judah Friedlander has been here to actually share a pick three playlist with us. And we're going to wrap up with pick number three, the Star Wars theme, but not as we've come to hear it normally.
Yeah.
What is happening here with this Miko arrangement?
Okay. Star Wars, you know. Very well-known movie.
Right.
Many people's favorites.
I've heard of it.
Certainly was my favorite as a kid. I saw it in the theater in 1977. I knew nothing about it before I went into the movie theater, and it just, you know, obviously just blew me away. And years later, I was making a short film. I made this film, I think, in 89. It was called I Did It for Disco. And it's about... one roommate's a Sean Cassidy fan, one's a Kiss fan, and they hate each other. A bunch of crazy stuff happens. But anyways, I wanted to end the movie with like a disco version of Star Wars. And I found a couple versions, and it was actually not this Miko version. I found two other versions that I thought were great. One was by Tomita, and one was by someone else. And then a few years later, I discovered Miko, and I was like, wow, this version is better than all the other versions. So it's a disco version of Star Wars. So it's almost like
And it's epic.
Yeah, it's
like 15 minutes
long.
Yeah,
it's about 15 minutes long. And it makes just like a 1970s disco party out of the Star Wars music. It's like it takes it to such a ridiculous level. It's just an amazing celebration. And every once in a while when I end my stand-up shows, I will exit the stage to this song.
The song is Miko, their version of the Star Wars theme, and Judah Friedlander will be doing his stand-up at Caroline's on Broadway Thursday through Saturday night, October 2nd through the 4th. Judah, a lot of fun having you with us today on Soundcheck.
Hey, I've had a great time hanging out here. This is cool.
Up next, the English singer Paloma Faith has a number one single on the UK charts right now, but came to the States recently for a bit of anonymity. She joins us to sing a couple of songs from her upcoming album, A Perfect Contradiction, right here in the Soundcheck studio. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The British singer Paloma Faith provided the guest vocals on this number one UK hit, Changing, by the dance duo Sigma. But strip away the modern production, the synths, and the dance beats, and Paloma Faith's voice could just as easily be paired with a reggae beat, or a disco guitar riff, or a vintage 60s doo-wop sound. It's a versatility that she takes full advantage of on her latest album, A Perfect Contradiction. Paloma Faith joins us here in the studio with a very stripped-down version of her band, and she's going to start us off with a song from that new album. It's called Only Love Can Hurt Like This.
Tell myself it don't mean nothing, and what we got no hold on me. But when you're not there, I just crumble. I tell myself I don't care that much, but I feel like I die till I feel your touch. Only love can hurt like this. Only love can hurt like this. Must have been a deadly kiss. Only love can hurt like this. Say I wouldn't care if you walked away, but every time you're there, I'm begging you to stay. I just tremble. And every time you go, it's like a knife that cuts right through my soul. Only love can hurt like this. Only love can hurt like this. Must have been a deadly kiss. Can hurt like this. Only love can hurt like this. Must have been a deadly kiss. Only love can hurt like this. Only love can hurt like this. Your kiss is burning.
That is Paloma Faith live on Soundcheck and her song Only Love Can Hurt Like This. You'll find it on Paloma Faith's new album called A Perfect Contradiction. She's here with me in the Soundcheck studio along with Naomi Miller on backing vocals and Peter Daly at our piano. Paloma, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
This is the record has a big sound, you know, lush orchestrations, big bands, yeah, strings and all that. Do you get a chance to do this kind of stripped-down thing very often?
Quite often. Like, sometimes during my gigs, I just decide to do things like that, just for a change.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite nice.
Well, now, the record, A Perfect Contradiction, I understand you wrote a lot of the songs while you were here in New York. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did. I fell in love with someone from New York, and I decided to come and spend some time here so that I wasn't away from him. And kill two birds with one stone. I decided that I should work here, and I ended up writing here with John Legend and Stuart Matthewman, who's like part of Sade. And then I went to LA to work with lots of people in Miami.
Pharrell Williams.
Pharrell.
Yeah.
LA was Raphael Sadiq. Mm-hmm. So I worked with a lot of amazing people here.
And was it good to get away from London where, you know, to a place where maybe your profile isn't so,
yeah,
the distractions aren't as high?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me that, like, for me, the greatest music comes from when people write about stuff that everyone can relate to. And mm-hmm, I really don't like this kind of current climate in popular music where it's all about, like, drinking champagne and, like, living a life that no one really gets unless they're a pop star. And I'm all like people singing about going on tour or whatever. It's mm-hmm, like, it's kind of uninspiring to me. So I decided that I should, you know, go somewhere where I can be and exist back to like how I was before I was popular. Like, obviously, I'm less well known here. So that's
right,
why I came here. I mean, like, to give you an example of the difference, like, I've got an arena tour in March in the UK, which is 20,000 people a night, and my current tour, which I'm on in the US, is about 1,000 people a night.
Right.
So it kind of just demonstrates that difference, really.
Which is funny. You never know who's going to sort of cross over the pond.
Yeah.
You know, Adele was a big hit in the UK and then became massive here. But,
yeah,
you know, there's a whole generation of great English singers, many of whom we don't know here, and I'm sure that it's the same for a lot of American artists who were really low profile in the UK. But this wasn't your first kind of dalliance with New York. You wrote a song about New York on your first record.
Yeah, because I had an ex-boyfriend who came to New York and dumped me to come here, basically. So I've lost one and I've got one back. It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you live when you were here in New York?
Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So boyfriend must have been a musician or an artist or?
An artist.
Okay. And did you find that Williamsburg scene to be inspiring in any way?
Yeah, it was cool. It reminds me very much of East London, which is where I'm from. I was born there, so East London's gone through a similar transformation.
Absolutely.
When I was born there, it was rough, and now it's like full of artists and yuppies. I don't know if you use that word in America.
We don't use that word so much anymore.
Do you understand it?
We absolutely know what it means.
But basically, that's what Williamsburg is as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, what's happened in East London?
I joined
over
the yuppies,
past,
by the way. I'm an honorary one.
But what's happened? I mean, which part of East London are you from?
I'm from Dalston.
Okay. I mean, everything sort of east of the city, as they call it, used to be, you know, as you say, pretty rough, and
yeah,
there wasn't a lot there. And
yeah,
now just...
just loads of takeaway places.
Shoppies with an E at the end and all that kind of
yeah,
stuff. Artisanal things. And very much what has happened to downtown Brooklyn
yeah,
in the past generation. So the album's called A Perfect Contradiction.
That's right.
And although you could view it as a contradiction, all the different sounds and styles on the record, there's one song that sounds almost like the Supremes or Motown from the there's another song that sounds like it could have come out of the Brill Building, you know, the famous songwriting building here in New York. And then there's the Pharrell song, which is very modern sounding. Somehow you make that not sound like a contradiction. How do you do that?
Well, I think when I first set out to make this record, I decided that I wanted to pay homage to all the music that I listen to, and I don't see much difference. I'm a soul artist, and I appreciate soul music, and I listen to anything from, like, the 50s right through to, like, you know, the 90s soul, and I wanted to kind of not restrict myself to, like, one thing, because that's all the styles that I grew up with. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of Etta James and Laverne Baker and Aretha Franklin and, like, Winoni Harris and people like that from, like, 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming right up to, like, New Jack Swing in the 90s, loving, like, SWV and Belle Biv DeVoe and people like that. So I kind of wanted to, like, put them all in a melting pot. And that's a perfect contradiction. It's called as such because it's not really about the music. It's more about the importance of the pull between light and dark and pain and joy and how you can't experience one without the other. So, because most of my work prior to this has been quite melancholic, and then when I wrote this album, I was like crazy in love with someone. I was kind of saying to myself, well, I'm really pleased that I'd experienced that sadness, because otherwise I wouldn't realize how joyful this moment in time is.
And those two albums that, you know, might have been a little more melancholy, they were both really successful albums over in the UK.
Both went double platinum.
How's this one doing? Do people like the happy Paloma Faith?
Yeah, everyone's loving it because I'm naturally kind of a tragic romantic. So, like, it's sonically, it's kind of positive, but if you listen to the lyrics, I'm still miserable.
Paloma Faith, born two centuries too late. You should have been a Bronte sister. Paloma's here with a stripped-down version of her band on Soundcheck today. You want to do Trouble With My Baby next?
Yes, we're ready to dance now.
All right. Once again, Paloma Faith singing. Naomi Miller, backup vocals. Peter Daly is at our piano. Here's this song called Trouble With My Baby.
Well, you ask for money, it's always something. We're getting close to goodbye, you're running out of time. I need someone to rely on, a shoulder to cry on, instead of someone of mine. Gonna draw the line, baby, baby. You changed and I need a little loving. With emotion, don't know if you're coming or going. There's emptiness in your eyes, your tongue's always tied. I had enough of being a hero. One day I'm gonna give you zero, and you'll have no place to hide in this heart of mine, baby, my baby. And I need a little loving. Like this, but now somebody shake me.
Somebody shake me.
Please, somebody wake me.
Somebody wake me.
'Cause
I know.
I do.
Too much.
For you, I got trouble with my baby. Yes, I have. Somebody help me. Got trouble with my baby. Trouble with my baby.
The song's called Trouble With My Baby. That is a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio from the English singer Paloma Faith. Paloma Faith's new album, A Perfect Contradiction, is out here in the United States on October 7th. And Paloma, thank you very much for being with us, and thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
When you love someone dear, they can do no wrong. But when you love too hard, you sing a different song. You got to take your time and build it slow and get it all together and watch it grow. The bigger you love, the bigger you love.
Tomorrow on the show, Bob's Burgers, the cult cartoon hit about a family who owns a burger joint, kicks off its fifth season this weekend, and we'll get an exclusive preview of the musical episode that will launch this new season of the show. And we'll talk with the show's creator, Lauren Bouchard, about the upcoming Bob's Burgers soundtrack and his great love for Casio keyboards. Plus, Canadian singer Jill Barber performs songs from her latest album, Fool's Gold. It features an ever-expanding stable of influences, including Motown, R&B, jazz, swing, and folk. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.